I have to give a shout out. I hate giving shout outs because I hate that term shout out, but I couldn't think of another way to describe it. So right now, we're going to shout out. That's a terrible term. Anyways, I want to talk about a float spa in Hot Springs, Arkansas. So it's the newest place to float in Arkansas. Go check them out at floatspaus.com. You can find them on Facebook as well. They have dream pods at this beautiful, beautiful spa. Budo and Brittany are some really wonderful folks who've opened up floating to their community. So if you guys live anywhere near Arkansas, Hot Springs, Arkansas, Hot Springs, Arkansas to be specific, go check them out because it's a great place to get your float on. As you know from listening to the podcast, we talk about floating all the time. And each and every episode of the podcast is brought to you by Crystal Water Float Spa, located in Twilly, Utah. crystalwaterfloat.com. Lay back and relax in a tank full of 150 gallons of water and a little over 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt. Creates a beautiful environment for your body to disappear and relax. The benefits of floating are endless, and at Crystal Water Float Spa, you get to float in dream pods. You can go find out more about the dream pod at dream-pod.com. Crystal Water is also the nation's only distributor of the Dream Pod. So when you're ready to open up your float center, you can contact Crystal Water directly. Your pod gets shipped out immediately, and then you can open up your center and bring floating to your community, bring floating to the place that you live. If you haven't already, I need you to go to our Facebook page or to our website, energyislovepodcast.com, and click on the tab for Craig and Steph. My wife, Stephanie, and I are evolution coaches, and we help people in the process of living their most immense, fullest, potentially amazing life possible. So everybody struggles in life. Everybody has issues, whether it's in relationships, careers, jobs. In the end, it's all about embracing who you are at the core and expanding upon that so that you can live the most beautiful life possible. And we can help you with that. So reach out and contact us. You can do that through the website or on our Facebook page. There's links to it everywhere. Craig and Steph, your evolution coaches. Remember, go find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, anywhere you can download and listen to podcasts. We are available. And as always, our episodes are at energyislovepodcast.com. On this episode, I got the wonderful opportunity. Every episode is a wonderful opportunity for me. And on this episode, I got to speak with Sarah Christensen. Sarah has created an academy she calls the Beautiful Life Academy. You can find all the information at sarahchristensen.com. And essentially what she does is she helps women design and live their most beautiful lives. She incorporates a lot of different spiritual practices and makes them approachable and easy to embrace initially for people. Because a lot of times the things that we discuss on the podcast, whether it's meditation or energy work or crystals, all these different aspects and all these different things can at first, especially if you're not open or if you've never really heard about these things, they can seem really out there and bizarre. But Sarah has a wonderful way of helping people in the process of living their greatest lives. Now you guys get to sit back and relax and enjoy this episode of the podcast for the universe with my wonderful guest, Sarah Christensen. Remember, go find all of her stuff at sarahchristensen.com. Here we go.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
It's Sarah Christensen, right?
Yes, it is.
And you're from California, if I'm not mistaken. What part of California do you live in?
Well, right now I live in San Diego, where it's pretty much sunny and sunshiny and happy every single day, which is such a difference for me because I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a Minnesota girl, so all this sunshine and warmth is delicious.
Yeah, it's quite the difference from Minnesota.
Yes.
I actually lived in Minnesota for a while back when I was 18. I moved there for a few months, and it was during the winter months, so I never got to see Minnesota when it was beautiful and green and everything. It was always cold and miserable.
Yes, that pretty much is a Minnesota winter. You have to be a hardy person to live there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to chat with you, and I appreciate you reaching out to the podcast and everything. There's a lot of stuff that I want to kind of get into. But first off, let's talk about sarahchristensen.com.
Great. great. Well, sarahchristensen.com is all about teaching women how to create their own version of a beautiful life. In our worlds, we are never taught how to make a plan for our life and how to live consciously and how to live mindfully. And the irony of it is we plan things like birthday parties, we plan things like projects for work, we even plan for our retirement, but there's really no place that we've ever learned how to create this overarching, conscious, mindful plan for our life and then how to make that happen. So through some kind of crazy, tragic situations in my life where I've had to take a very, very close look at what was going on in my life and create a conscious plan for myself, I really had this light bulb moment of, oh my gosh, this is life-changing for me. I need to tell the world about it.
I've read a little bit about your past and your story and things like that, all the information that you have on your website. I want to talk about it, if that's okay, because I think it's, first off, I think it's amazing to kind of, do I think your story is unique? Yes, I think everybody's story is unique. But then at the same time, I think there's always a lot of common themes and things like that, that people just, you know, exist in. One of them, I think so many times people get stuck in that space of surviving life as opposed to living it. Where yes. We just move through each day, just kind of doing everything that we possibly can to get to bed at the end of the night because life is so challenging and so difficult. Did you find that for the vast majority of your life, I should say?
100%. Since I was a kid, I was very much in survival mode. I grew up very poor. I was a welfare kid. I didn't have a lot of parenting, if you will, and It was literally one day to the next when I was a kid. I remember when my sister was a little girl and I was taking care of her, I opened the refrigerator one day and there were literally a package, half eaten package of hot dogs in there. No ketchup, no mustard, nothing. That was basically what we were going to have for dinner because my mom wasn't around. And so it was those kind of situations as a kid where I was definitely in survival mode, but it also, I look back upon those days as training for my life now, training to be scrappy and resourceful. And I'm very appreciative of those experiences I had. And it seems like that was my starting point for a lot of days of survival. I mean, quite frankly, I was in survival mode until I hit my 40s. It was between growing up as a super poor kid, barely getting myself to college. My mom died of breast cancer when I was 29 and I took over care of my brother and sister. And she was sick for probably 5 years before that. But my sister was 10 and my brother was 13 when my mom died. So I spent all of my 30s being a single mom and also running a company. I'd started a company. So I was very much in survival mode at that point. There was one point where I was going to a like back to school night for one of the kids at the high school. And I was leaving my business and I was running through the halls of the high school. And as you know, in Minnesota, it gets dark very early in the wintertime. And this was the wintertime. And I was running past a set of windows, which because it's dark outside and it was light inside, they were like mirrors. And I caught a glimpse of myself. And the skirt that I had on that day was on completely backwards. And it was very clear it was on backwards. And I looked at myself, I'm like, oh my God, this is so my life right now. I am just like running, literally running from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. So very much survival mode. I had a period of time after my brother and sister went to college where I was, in the course of literally a couple of weeks, I found out that my business partner was kicking me out of my business, that my husband was cheating on me, and I had cervical cancer. So that was a serious period of survival. And again, through all of these experiences, I feel like I learned so much and it caused me to pause at certain moments and say, really, is this really what life is all about? And after I got through, you know, the crisis of the day, I had a moment to take a step back and say, this isn't how I want to live my life anymore. I'm exhausted. This isn't very much fun. I feel like I'm fighting every single day. And quite frankly, there were some days that all I could look forward to at the end of the day was sitting down in front of the TV with literally a bottle of wine and thinking, this is not the life that I want. This is not how I want to operate. But I think my experience, which is common with a lot of other people's, is that we just don't go into life. I mean, how would we? with a conscious, mindful mindset of what we want to accomplish and how we want to serve people and what we want to experience. But I took all of that crazy crisis and trauma and drama and had a point where I was like, enough of that. I need to live a different kind of way. And that's really what came out of all of this. But you're right. There's definitely a lot of commonality with what I see in what I went through and what I see with my clients and the people that I interact with. It is not uncommon for us to be in this kind of crazy paced world where at the end of the day, we are exhausted when we're plopping down in front of the TV with some wine and a bag of chips.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
First off, I think people that go through, because I think it's really common for people to survive life. We don't really embrace it initially. We don't really, because we're never taught how to, right? Especially if you grow up in some sort of broken home or trauma or anything like that, where you're experiencing that stuff as a child, then it's really difficult as an adult to eventually get to that point. You know, like you said, you survived your life essentially up until you were 40. What were some of the coping mechanisms? Because I think that's really common as well, where people are even unaware of it in the beginning, where they're surviving life and they're just kind of fighting everything that they can to get through it from one shitty experience to the next. But they have coping mechanisms in order to kind of ease the pain. Sometimes it's alcohol, sometimes it's food, whatever the case may be. Did you have things like that as well? Not that I mean, I don't want to call you out on anything by any way, shape, or form.
It's okay. I already said I sit down with a bottle of wine. I totally understand. I wouldn't say I had an alcohol problem by any means or that I was a heavy drinker by any means, but I definitely look forward at the end of the day to sitting down with a glass of wine. And, you know, sometimes a bag of potato chips. I think my biggest coping mechanism, though, was always having hope and looking into the future. I didn't do a lot of living in the moment and being present in the moment, a lot of times because it was so painful and it just sucked, quite frankly. But I always felt like something better is going to come or something's going to happen or I'm going to be able to be in a different kind of place. So my coping mechanism was mostly looking forward into a future that I believed was possible. And I do think that just, I have a cheery disposition and kind of a happy nature. So for me, I didn't get into anything that was destructive or I didn't do anything that wasn't necessarily going to be positive or help me. I mean, certainly I had moments of, you know, crying and screaming and dealing with the drama of the day. But just as far as coping is concerned, for me, it was very much about holding on to hope that there was something better in the future and that it wasn't always going to be this painful. And I always thought to myself, all of the shit in my life has got to be front loaded on this first half. Like, if I can just make it through this, like, it's got to be better, right? I can't, my mom's not going to die again. I'm not going to go through these exact same experiences again. So it's got to get better.
Yeah. It's a good way to look at it. What was it? Was there some big, I mean, you talked about your husband cheating on you, your mother passing away, being diagnosed with cervical cancer. Was it just a combination of all of these different things that you feel like eventually tipped you over that edge where you wanted more out of life? You no longer wanted to survive day to day. You no longer wanted to live that way. Or, you know, did you have some life changing experience or something like that?
Yeah, I do believe it was a combination of all of those things, but there was kind of a moment for me. And that was when, you know, all this crazy stuff happened to me at one time with my husband cheating on me getting kicked out of my business and getting cervical cancer. That was like the perfect storm. I mean, I had been through a lot before that, but when that came, I was like, oh my God, are you serious? Like, really? All at the same time, I was really at that point. And at that point, I was not very spiritual or connected into the divine, but I remember saying, like, really? You're going to give me all of this stuff at once? What am I missing here? Like, what kind of like karmic bitch slap is happening to me at this point in time where all of this stuff came down? And the moment for me was when I was with my regular doctor, not my regular doctor, but the doctor that had done like the procedure on me for my cervical cancer, and the results came back. And basically the results were that they had removed some tissue, but on the edges of the tissue, there were still cancer cells, meaning that there were probably still cancer cells in my body. And the doctor saying to me, we'll just wait like 6 months and see what happens. And I literally have a moment where I was like, oh no, there is no way I have survived this much in my life to wait and see what was going to happen inside of my body. Like it felt so, it was just against everything that I believed in. It was against every like cell in my body to just be passive and wait for that to happen. So that was a moment of clarity for me where I vowed and I did take extremely good care of my body and cure that, but it was more than just my body. It was really about, I had been afraid of breast cancer and I had survived all of this other stuff because my mom died of breast cancer. So that was what I was scared of. And I had survived all this other stuff that was really scary and it was just intense. And then it was coming down to this moment for me. I was like, I'm not going down this way. There's no way I survived all of this stuff to be taken down by this. And again, it was more than just about my body for me. It was about my whole entire life. So that moment was when I really, really took conscious, mindful care of my body and then what was happening in my life. That really was the beginning of me creating what I use now as my framework and my structure for my own life and the women that I work with in creating their life plan. I mean, I literally have notebooks from back in that time where I'm starting to create what the framework looks like and putting my life together in this mindful way. And I, quite frankly, I looked for help and I looked for other resources to help me create this. And while there's some amazing teachers out there and some amazing books and some amazing other frameworks, what I was struggling with is how can I take this and do something about it today? Like the thought of having cancer still in my body made me like shiver. Like I wanted to do something about it today. So I was very focused on what can I do today? I can do my Manuka honey. I can do my aloe. I can drink my green juice. I can go work out. I can meditate. I can do all of these kinds of things today to make my tomorrow a better tomorrow. So that was kind of, I guess the long answer is it was an accumulation of all of that stuff that had happened, but it was in that one moment when my doctor said, just wait and see. And I went, oh, hell no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, that's a terrible 6 months just sitting there. I can't even imagine trying to go through that.
Awful, awful. And the great news was I really feel like the path that I took from that moment over the next 3 months, which I went back to the doctor and insisted they treat me or they test me in 3 months. And I had to pay for it. Insurance wouldn't cover it, but I insisted that they test me. What I did between that moment and those 3 months later, I believe absolutely positively got rid of any leftover behind cancer cells that were there. And I had a totally clean scan. So I was all good to go. But, and so that was another affirmation to me, like I can control and manage a lot of what's going on in my life to be purposeful and mindful about what I want the outcome to be. So if I do this today, I know that it will set me on this trajectory to get to where I want to be in that tomorrow.
One of the things that you talked about was help. And I think that it's really important for people to get outside of that framework or that mindset of thinking that they need to be able to do everything by themselves and shame associated with kind of revealing some of the things that you're experiencing and going through. So talk a little bit about the importance, I think, of seeking help regardless of what form or fashion it comes in. And how that, like, what did you do in regards to that? Who did you seek out?
That's a good question because I have recently turned a huge corner on this. In the past, I have not been someone who's asked for help or who has accepted help. And I think it is because I grew up so fiercely independent and I could take care of everything myself. And I didn't necessarily need people to show up for me. At least that's what I thought. And so during these periods, I really honestly, I did not have help. When my mom died, I was the only one. And when she was sick, I took my mom to every single appointment. I was there for everything. I took care of my brothers and sisters. That was kind of my whole entire mode growing up. So I just stepped into that in a bigger role. So when my mom died, you know, I take care of the kids completely on my own. And, you know, when I went through being sick, I did that completely on my own. At that point, when I was married and I had a husband, he just didn't show up for me. And so for me, that was another affirmation that if I needed somebody to show up, they're not going to show up. So it wasn't, I had not been in an environment where I have received help in a way that made me seek it out. So I went through so much of that stuff on my own. But I think that the lesson that I got out of that is even though even though people may not show up in the way that I thought they should or I would have wanted them to, even having a portion of the help that I desired would have been a good thing. Now, I can tell you that I've had a huge breakthrough in this as of late. I'm actually in a relationship with a wonderful man who has shown me that when he shown me how to surrender and receive in a really beautiful way. He shows up very big for me, and I've been able to let him in and help me. Like right now, I'm in the middle of a big move. I'm moving. And the other day he said to me, can I come over and help? And my first reaction was to say, no, I got it. Like I can handle it. And yet inside I'd be struggling. But I said, sure, come on over. You can help me pack boxes or, you know, carry boxes or whatever kind of stuff you want to help me do. But for me, help has not been something easy to ask for just because I haven't experienced that in the past. But I can tell you now that I have received it and I've been on the side of this receiving, it's pretty amazing. And I tell my girlfriends and my clients this all the time, like, you got to let your men show up for you and you got to let people around you help you. Now, they may not do it the exact way that you would want them to do it, but the imperfect help and imperfect showing up to give is so much better than holding out for perfection, because the holding out for perfection just makes us exhausted at the end of the day and resentful that nobody has shown up to help us. But I think it's hard. I think it's hard, especially for women. You brought up the word shame. I think when we're in it, and we are in situations that don't cast us in the most positive light or things that we're embarrassed about, that's the time that we have the worst problem asking for help. Because again, we are embarrassed and we're shameful. And what I think is happening now even more because of social media and access to seeing everyone else's highlight reel is we know our bloopers. We know all the behind the scenes shit that's not perfect, that's icky, that's ugly, that's messy. And we're comparing that against everyone else's perfect family pictures on Facebook and where everybody looks good and nobody has a hair out of place or nobody has like a zit on their forehead. So we have this weird comparison thing going on. And I think because of that, we do feel shameful to ask for help. I mean, it's embarrassing and it's not something that we want to be talking about. So I think it's even harder now, especially for women, to say, I'm having a problem. I'm struggling. I'm stressed. I need help. And at the same time, I think there's a lot of hope that we can turn this around. I mean, I love some authors that I think are speaking to this directly. Brené Brown is one of them. Elizabeth Gilbert. I think they're directly taking on some of this bullshit perfection and not being opening ourselves up to being real and to be people. Because the fact of the matter is we're all perfectly imperfect. And it's oftentimes the things that are not perfect about us that make us the most interesting. And I encourage the people around me to ask for help and to open themselves up to receive, especially in those times when they have shame, especially in those times when they're embarrassed about what's going on. I have a client right now who's going through something with someone in her family that, I mean, it definitely has the grounds to be embarrassing and shameful. But the more she talks about it and the more it's in the light, the less it feels like it's scary or nobody else has gone through that before, the more she feels like it's her fault. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, but it's something that can be practiced and can be really beautiful for everybody involved.
I think it's asinine. Like it, for me, I mean, I understand it because I suffer from the same, whatever we want to label it as. I think that people in general, both men and women, across the board, struggle in that space of seeking help and asking for help. And part of me understands why, but me personally, I feel that it comes from, first off, I think it's one of the main reasons why we're here in this existence of life, however we want to view it, whether you're religious, spiritual, it doesn't matter. I think it's one of the main reasons why this whole experience of this planet exists is so that we can interact and help one another in the process of just simply living. And so I don't know why we're so resistant to it. I don't know why people have so much shame associated with it, because, I mean, you bring up social media and Facebook and everything like that, where everything does look perfect, where you've got your group of friends and everything that you follow, and you're always comparing yourself to them or whatever the case may be. I think people have done that for a very, very long time. You know, you used to see the neighbor across the street or whatever the case may be, whose grass was always greener, whose lawn was always mowed, who always appeared to have some idealistic kind of life and experience. And then the more you get to know people and the more you get to realize that everybody's jacked up in some way, shape, or form. Everybody's struggling with, do you know what I mean? Any number of things. And I just think it's asinine that we still stay in the space of thinking that, first off, we can't talk about it, that we have to hide these things and these aspects and only put forth the best of everything. And then secondly, I think it's like profoundly important that we share all of these things with people and discuss all of these things. I mean, you, for example, you have a business designed specifically around helping people. Your goal in life is to help people, right? Yes. Now, if people don't seek out that help, well, then you don't have a business. I mean, it just is so mind-boggling to me that people still are in that space of some negative association with needing help. I need help with so many different things, a variety of different things. You know what I mean? Across the board, there's things that I need help with. Nobody's perfect in any way, shape, or form. And that concept and that idea of perfection is just asinine in my mind.
It is asinine. I agree. I mean, I think in our heads, we know that logically it makes sense, but I think there is something running through our emotions and our souls that do make it difficult, because it's vulnerable and it feels sticky and icky. And it's like that uncomfortable kind of feeling especially when you're asking for help in the areas that I deal with, because we're looking at all aspects of their life. And part of it is you have to put things into the light before you can change them and make them better. But people get to the point where they're embarrassed about choices that they've made in life, that they haven't made perfect choices, that maybe they made, you know, their body isn't what they want it to be, their money isn't where they want it to be, their relationship isn't where they want it to be. And I'm always encouraging them, like, let's get in. That's the time for us to dig in. It's the same kind of analogy, like people not wanting to join a gym until they're in better shape, right?
Well, you have to look good when you go work out.
Right, exactly. Like, you don't want to be embarrassed about stepping on the scale. You want to make a little bit more progress before you have to step on the scale. It's the exact same kind of thing. You have to be brave and be courageous to say, I want something different and I can't do it all myself. And I think that's a beautiful thing when you can get there to start to ask for help. And like I said, I've just been personally experiencing this myself recently, when in this relationship that I'm in has allowed me so much growth to be in more of a feminine receiving mode and to have my man show up for me in that masculine role. And what I'm seeing is that is rippling out into so many other things in my life and so many other people, because I have had this experience of my guy showing up for me that way. I can allow my dad to show up for me in that way. I can allow the maintenance guy at my building to show up for me that way. I can allow my friends to show up for me that way, because I know that when they show up, it's not going to be perfect and I'm going to be okay with that. But the end result of what I get out of that and what they get, quite frankly, out of giving to me is beautiful. And that's exactly what you were saying, is we are here to support and to love and to help each other. And when that happens, everybody gets something good out of it. That's one thing I talk about a lot, is when you receive, not only are you getting a gift, but you're giving someone else a gift to want to help. Every time we have been called on, if someone says, I need your help, I need your input, it feels good to give in that way and it feels good to serve. So the more of that we can exchange with each other, again, the more everybody feels good about that interaction.
I totally agree. I mean, I think I tell myself that a lot. I'll talk to my children about it. I talk to, you know, the aspect of, you're robbing somebody of that feeling. Like, if you think about how it feels to help somebody with whatever it is, whether it's helping somebody move or helping somebody pack or helping somebody shift and change, you know, massive things in their life, at the end of it, you feel good. It feels good to help people. It feels good to give a part of you in some way, shape, or form. And when you don't allow people that opportunity, then you kind of rob them of that experience. Everybody, you know, everybody knows what that feeling's like, because everybody gets it when they help somebody, even, you know, whether it's something small of helping somebody cross the road or something like that, you still feel good about it. And I think that that's a really important, I mean, aspect of it. There's a thing in the realm of spirituality and energy work and everything like that. When you work with a client or when you work with somebody, there's an energy exchange that takes place. And so, yes, you're helping them through whatever process it is that they sat down before you. But at the end of it, you're also getting something in exchange for that. And I mean, that's, I think it's one of the laws of the universe or whatever we want to call it. It's a very important aspect.
100%. Absolutely. I mean, we've all heard that if you're having a bad day, go out and do something for someone else, serve someone else, give to someone else. And it really does make a difference. We've probably all had the shared experience of doing some volunteer work and feeling like we got more out of it than the people or the things that we were serving. It really is, I believe it's a universal truth as well.
In your journey, in your experience, in this whole shift and change of your life where you went through and kind of realized, you no longer wanted to live the way that you were living, did you find any answers or peace or solitude in some of the spiritual stuff, some of the things that we talk about on the podcast a lot and things like that?
I was angry for a long time about spirituality and religion. I did not have the best experience when I was a kid. So it was not something that I looked to for comfort, but I will say that over the years, as I've gone through some of these crazy experiences, I could not ignore some of the synchronicities that were happening and some of the miracles and magic that were happening that were so profound that it was something where I feel like my introduction to spirituality was through very traditional religion. We were very much judged by the church that we belonged to. My mom was a single mom. She had four kids by four different guys. We weren't the model like citizens in our little teeny tiny town. And so we were actually kicked out of our church because my mom had this, experience. And so I pushed against that for a long time because my perception of spirituality was very much tied to religion and tied to the negative experience I had with this, with this very strict church. But like I said, I could not ignore some of the synchronicities that were happening and some of the things that were popping up around me and some of the people, quite frankly, that were coming into my life to help me to have an open mind about what was possible and what might be at play in a bigger picture. So I very much started, I would say, my spiritual path in the past couple of years through again, not being able to ignore it anymore. I mean, things would happen and people would show up and there would be connections where my mind would be blown. So I really am thankful to some of the spiritual teachers that I've had. There's a woman named Jenna Gesse who is just an amazing intuitive healer. She was a huge influence on me, just even opening up to what was possible and helping me to start using some of the spiritual tools that I use and that I teach now, things like meditating and manifesting and, praying and things that in the past, again, I've pushed against so hard because they came with a lot of emotional baggage, but being able to ease into them in a way that didn't feel judgmental, that didn't feel like I had to follow any prescription. I guess the moment or the difference for me was realizing that I could create the spiritual practice that I wanted. I didn't have to follow the rules that somebody said, this is the way you connect with God. This is how you interact with God. This is how you speak to God. This is what you get from God. It was about, for me, creating my own relationship with the divine and having that be an evolving relationship. There are certainly some phases of my life now where I'm way more connected in. And then there are some where I'm not, but again, I'm defining what that means and how I'm tapping in and to what degree that has a force in my day-to-day life. I mean, quite honestly, there are some days where I'm like talking to the divine in my car. I'm having a conversation. I'm very connected in. I might have my crystals in my car. I might be, have my aromatherapy going on. And then there are some days where I'm not so connected in. But a big piece for me now is realizing that it can be what I want and need it to be. And it can also be something that is very private for me. And it can also be something that I'm sharing with the people around me or sharing with the people that I'm teaching or the people in the world. So for me, it's very fluid at this point. And I'm at a point where I can realize and I can also encourage others to make it what they want. Does that make sense?
Very much so. And I think it's, I mean, I think that's the important part. I think that's the difference between religion and spirituality, not just the only difference. I think there's a lot of common things between them. But if you look at spirituality, I think it's a personal connection with whatever higher power or bigger thing than yourself that you want to call it. I call it the universe. For me, it's all about energy in the universe and love and blah, blah, blah. But in the end, it's really no difference, you know, than people that believe in God.
Yes.
It's just what we choose to label it as. But I think it is my own personal interaction. It's my own personal connection with it. And like you said, there's days where I'm very, very connected. And then there's other days when I'm super disconnected, where it seems like nothing's really going right. But I wanted to hit on something because you talked about realizing that there's synchronistic things that kept happening that you would realize that you almost couldn't deny anymore. I think that those synchronistic events that happen, the people that come into our lives, the things that kind of seem like the universe spun and aligned things so that we were able to step into a space. I think that those things are continually and always happening. We just simply haven't brought awareness to it to realize it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that since you've kind of, you know, brought awareness to it in an aspect where you kind of can recognize some of those things that have happened, do you agree that it seems like they're always kind of happening more and more? Or do you think that it's specific time periods in your life when God or the universe will help you out and, you know, throw that person into your space or into your life in order to help you?
Sure. You know, I honestly think it's a little bit of both. I feel like there are definitely synchronicities happening and messages all the time, but we are not always seeing them. So when you're more open to receive those messages, you're obviously taking those in and seeing those. Like, for example, my tarot card number is 43. That's just that has been my card, my number. I cannot tell you the amount of times that the number 43 shows up to me. Up to the point of, I was at a hockey game once, and there's this game that you play where you buy these pucks and then you chuck the pucks out into the hockey, the ice.
Yeah.
And you try to get it close to the circle. Of course, the puck that I get is number 43. I mean, that kind of stuff just happens to me all the time. I was at a shop in San Francisco, and they had all these cool house numbers, like old vintage house numbers, in a box. And I literally just reached my hand into the box and pulled out two numbers. And of course, it was a 4 and a 3. Like, this kind of stuff just happens to me all the time. So whenever that happens, I'm always tapped into what my tarot card means and kind of reconnecting and grounding with that. So I do think that those things happen all the time, whether we're seeing them or not. And at the same time, I feel like when we are asking for help and we are open to receiving, that it almost happens more. I mean, it's, I find that meditation is one of my very much my cornerstone of my spiritual practice. And there can be things that drop in during my meditation that are phenomenal. I have no idea where it came from. I mean, I know where it came from, but I have no like tracking back in terms of me and my consciousness to know that, oh gosh, I was thinking about that a week ago and now here it showed up. I mean, things show up completely out of the blue. But unless I put myself in that situation where I sit my butt down and I actually meditate and I'm purposeful and conscious about, hello, universe, send me some messages. I'm open to receive. I'm here. I'm having a challenge in this area of my life. And then I'm quiet and I shut up and I let the messages come in. That gives me an opportunity to tap in. So I do think that there are these synchronicities and messages and, you know, notes from the divine that pop in all the time. But I also do feel like when we're open to receive and we ask for that divine intervention, that it flows and comes in more abundance.
Tell me, cause I love the fact that you have a number, that you have 43. You know, I've got my own, numerology is a really, really big thing, and numbers have all these different meanings, and it's all, you know, in the end you can get lost in any sort of, I guess, teaching, dogma, whatever we want to attach it to, right? Like, people get really, really into numbers and kind of base their existence around angel numbers and all these different things.
Yep.
But what is it for you? What is the significance other than just the recognition of the universe kind of reminding you to be mindful and, you know, and grateful for the experience or whatever the case may be? Do you have something deeper?
Well, for me, the number 43 has a couple of deep meanings. One is that it was definitely a pivot point in my life, my 43rd year, which was last year. So there were some big changes and some pivots that happened in my life during that year. So that I knew that that was going to, or I anticipated that was going to happen. The other thing is that 43 sums to 7, which is my life path number, which is very much about how, you know, how I'm here to live this particular life. And it's also the, 3 of cups in the Rider deck tarot card, which is my card, which really signifies my purpose in this particular lifetime. And the 3 of cups shows 3 women dancing, holding chalices in the air. And the significance for me of that is that it's my purpose in this lifetime to take good care of myself and to live the happy, beautiful life that I want to live, and also to teach other women to do the same thing so that we can be dancing and joyful and live these kind of lives that we want to live. So when that number shows up for me, it's a reminder of what that purpose is for me. And it almost always shows up at a time where I'm out of kilter with that, where I might not be taking very good care of myself, or something might be off in my business. So when it does show up for me, it is a strong reminder of that. Actually, here's kind of a cool story. So I was, the last time I moved, it was kind of a tumultuous situation. I had broken off an engagement, and long story short, my friends basically showed up at my house one day and they're like, "We're moving you today." They packed up all my stuff. We like got a moving truck, moved all my stuff. And at the end of the day, I was completely exhausted. And I walked outside of my house and I was like kind of in a daze. And I looked down and there was a tarot card on the sidewalk. And I knew it looked like my deck. And I flipped it over and sure shit, it was the 3 of cups. And I was like, okay, this is bizarre. This is weird. I don't share with, like, my friends that move me, they don't know that that's my card. It was definitely a synchronicity. And I really didn't think all that much of it until I unpacked my stuff a couple of days later and realized that my 3 of cups was missing from my deck. So my 3 of cups card somehow ended up on my front step, communicating to me in some kind of a way that it was time to get back in balance, time to get back in check with what my purpose in this particular lifetime is. So that's
a beautiful story.
It's very, you know, it's very kind of mind blowing when that stuff happens, right? Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm listening.
Yeah. That's the stuff I love. I mean, that's the stuff that I think, you know, happens all the time. We just, you know, we get tuned out from it. We don't realize it, but I mean, that's 100%. The amazing stuff. How did you come, like, were you always into tarot cards and numerology, or, you know, the recognition of synchronistic things, or did it come in conjunction with, you know, your kind of shift and change in your life path?
No, I mean, I never really had exposure to that kind of stuff. I mean, I haven't been closed off to it, but I just really never had exposure. Like I said, a few years ago when I started this spiritual path and I started working with an intuitive healer, and then I went and saw a psychic / numerologist and some other kind of people who opened my mind to some of these other modalities, if you will, that's when I really started becoming interested and taking the pieces and parts from all of these that work for me. But I have a bunch of tarot decks. I can't say that I'm very good at reading them, but for fun, we will, when I have people over, we will always pull cards and see what's happening. And what's kind of interesting is, I had some family visit it's probably been a couple of years ago now, from my Minnesota, you know, good Midwestern Lutheran people come and visit me. And I had these, you know, crazy Sarah from California. She's got these tarot cards on her table. And I was like, let's pull some cards. So we pulled cards and they were shocked and amazed at how accurate they were. And so when they would come over to my house for that whole week that they visited, they were like, can we pull cards? And it was really fun to like expose them to that. And I sent them a deck of cards after they went home. But that's what I love, the kind of again, making it your own, going at your own pace, whether tarot works for you or crystals or, you know, whatever it might be, these different tools. And I really do look at them as different tools to help you to tap in and to ground into whatever your spirituality is for you. And you know, there's a bajillion different things you can do. You can do numerology or crystals or, you know, reading tea leaves or coffee grinds or, you know, whatever it might be. But there's, you know, there's so many great tools that are available.
I love that you say that it's tools, because I talk about that all the time. We talk to people all the time. And the fact is, like you said, there's so many different modalities, so many different things. And it's finding what you resonate with. It's finding what you connect with. And then just, you know, finding ways to incorporate it into your everyday life so that you can start the practice of whatever it may be.
100%. And most of the people that I work with, most of the women have not had all that much exposure to spirituality and some of these tools. So I start with things that are girly and pretty and feel good, things like really beautiful crystals or essential oils, those kinds of things that don't feel like they're like, you know, voodoo, woo-woo, kooky stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we start with those kinds of things, and teaching things like meditating and manifesting in a way that doesn't feel, again, that doesn't feel like it's voodoo or doesn't feel kooky or doesn't feel like it's bizarre, but it's, I put everything in a package of, you know, just here's a small way to start. Let's use this crystal as a tool. And then before I know it, they're like tucking crystals in their bras and they're asking me about tarot cards.
My wife carries like a pack of crystals with her all the time. And a lot of times it does end up tucked inside her bra. That's too funny.
Oh, yes. Yes. I had a client the other day tell me that she went to pick up, she was at a coffee shop and she went to pick up something and she dropped and a crystal fell out of her bra. She was embarrassed. I'm like, you should have told everybody about it.
So let's talk more about how you help women, like that, because it's helping women design a life for them that is a beautiful life. Like, what is your typical way of doing so, or, you know, your typical client, or what have you found that you mainly help them in the areas of what?
So I do some one-on-one work still, but most often my clients are joining my membership. So I have a monthly membership. And as part of that, I have an academy where I teach them through 5 steps how to create some like document source documents for life. The first one of them is called their life vision. So it's really, if you were to take a vision board and put it into written format, that's really what that is. But I have found that it's really even hard for people when you say, like, what do you want for your life? It's a big question, right? So breaking that down into, I have an exercise called the wish list for life, which is questions about all the different areas of your life and really what you desire in those areas. And everything that I do and the teaching that I do is all about like rocking out your own version of a beautiful life, because mine is different than yours and it's different than probably most people in the world. So it's really a framework for figuring out what you actually want out of life and what you want, not what you think you should be wanting or what the expectations are. So it's taking that wish list for life, combining it with some of the priorities that you have in your life right now to come up with this, it really is a source document for life and it's your life vision. So that's the big picture of what you want your life to be. And then it's taking that and breaking that down into, okay, if this is the big gigantic picture of what you want in life, what can we start working on today? And I always break everything into 90-day increments. I feel like 90 days is a good amount of time to make some progress, but it doesn't feel overwhelming. Like, you know, when you set New Year's resolutions and they're broken within a couple of days. So it's like 90 days. What can we do in 90 days? And then it's very actionable in terms of, this is what I want to accomplish. Here's the steps that I need to take. And I actually have a question, you'll be proud of me, that says, what help do I need to bring in to make this happen?
Beautiful.
What resources, you know, what challenges am I going to have? What are the reasons why I can't do this? And how am I going to break through that? So once they have their plan, then it's all about bringing in the resources and the training and the tools to make that happen. And a big piece of that, honestly, probably the biggest piece, is having support and accountability and encouragement. I mean, we all need that encouragement. We all need accountability. It's damn near impossible to hold yourself accountable. So I bring the community of women together where they hold each other accountable and they give each other ideas and suggestions and tips. And when they're having a bad day or they're not hitting what they want to be hitting that day, they can go into the group and get support from the group. So what I really facilitate and what I really give a process for is creating these source documents for life, and then the accountability and the support from both myself and the community to make that happen. And the magic in bringing these groups of women together is understanding that nobody is perfect, and having this group of people to be extremely vulnerable with and to be honest and to say, these are this is where I'm at in life. It's not where I want to be. This is the where I want to go. Help me get there. And then, by the way, I fell on my face today. I made this mistake. Help me get up again. So it's really, I believe the work that I do is to give people a process for creating this, because again, nobody ever teaches us how to create a plan for our life. So giving people a process to do that, and then me and the other women that are in this group to support and hold accountable and encourage. Some days I really think about myself as like everyone's biggest cheerleader. I mean, I'm an encourager all day long. I love to encourage people to do their best and to make a little bit of progress every day. And sometimes progress means a conscious pause. Sometimes it means saying, I'm exhausted today. All I can do is function. Or it might be, I need to sleep today. I just need to rest today. So sometimes progress means a conscious pause, and I'm encouraging that all of the time. But it really is about being mindful and conscious about what you do want out of life. And what I see all the time is little tiny shifts in people's lives make the biggest difference. And the one that I see that makes the biggest difference for my clients is to start out having a mindful morning. To get up 15 minutes, it doesn't have to be an hour, get up 15 minutes earlier than they normally do, and have those 15 minutes be their time to meditate, to set their intentions for the day, to do a little bit of exercise, to do a little bit of reading, to do a little bit of journaling. And again, those things can be just 3 to 5 minutes, but it's setting that tone for the day, because how you start your day is how the whole day goes, and how your day goes is how your weeks go, and how your weeks go is how your years go, and on and on and on. So by setting the tone for that morning, they set basically the tone for the rest of their lives. So I love to see the little tiny shifts and the things that can happen in just a few moments during the day to have such a profound impact on their lives. And that's something that I talk about a lot is, yes, we're going to create this big vision for your life, and yes, we're going to create a plan for your life, but I got to tell you, in the moments during the day, literally moments during the day, are what's going to change the outcome and what shows up on the other side of all of this.
I think that's really important. I think it's profound. I think that whole concept and idea that it's about the little moments, because you can think about how drastically your life can change in literally, the blink of an eye, just a brief moment. And so bringing awareness to that whole aspect, that whole concept. And I love the way that you not only described it, but I also agree with you with the fact that having some time to yourself in the morning is so, it's like you said, it can make the biggest change.
Right. Absolutely. It's so, because if you're flying out of bed after your alarm and everything is a rush from that moment, every cell in your body is going to react that way. But if you can start slow and start in the way that works for you, then it really does set the tone for the rest of the day. I know me personally, if I don't have time in the morning to move into my day the way that I know works for me, I will feel rattled the whole entire rest of the day. But if I can spend a few minutes meditating, if I can spend a few minutes reading, a few minutes, getting my coffee and journaling, it makes all the difference in the world. Same thing with exercise. And I do a lot of work with people on what's happening in their physical bodies, because it affects everything else in their lives so much. So exercise, I believe, is just a magic, magic thing for everyone, just because of what it does to our body. And I know for me personally, if I do not exercise, for a day or two, God forbid, I'll be a hot mess. But I know that about me. And so I can work that into what I have going on. But I do believe that doing something in the morning, whether you're stretching, or I encourage people to put on like their favorite song and just have like a little dance party for a few minutes. I mean, it really does make the difference.
What are some of the, if you could, like, what would you describe or say is your most deepest spiritual practice that you have?
That is an excellent question. I would say that my deepest spiritual practice at this point is extreme self-care. Meditation for me is part of that. If I am feeling good with taking care of myself, there's sunshine on the world around me. But if I'm not feeling good about that, it's like a rain cloud. And it, for me, it's even as extreme as if I have had a whole entire day of eating crappy food, I will feel awful the next day. But if I've eaten well the next day, I feel great. Like I wake up in the morning and my body just feels different. And again, I approach the world in a different kind of way. So for me, it's about self-care, part of that being physical, but part of that being, you know, making sure that I'm emotionally stable and connected in with my soul. And that's where my meditation comes into that. So the meditating is probably the, you know, most is the way that I connect into the divine and in the way that I connect into the universe. And I have that conversation and that relationship. And when I do that, I feel like I can almost extend that throughout my day. If I've meditated in the morning and I'm sitting at a stoplight waiting, I can almost drop back into that space. But if I don't do that, I have a hard time reconnecting. So it's that knowing, number one, how I can connect in, and then actually practicing that for me is miraculous.
What's your, because I think when it comes to meditation, practice is what it's all about. I think that, you know, there's no perfection in it, just like life, and it's a daily practice, and we just continue the practice of whatever that is. But what does your meditation practice look like? Like, walk me through what your typical, you know, what is it that you do when you meditate?
Sure. So I have two basic ways that I meditate. One is traditional. I have a meditation spot in my bedroom. I have a little round pillow that I sit on. I have a bowl next to me that has kind of trinkets and important little artifacts that I've collected through my travels or things from my family. So I will sit on that meditation pillow. My dog, who is a crazy old lady pug, likes to meditate with me. So she'll generally crawl on my lap. And I will set my alarm on my iPhone. I'm a odd number kind of person, so I generally set my meditation time for 11 or 21 minutes. If I can't get 11 or 21 in, I'll go for 5 or 7, but it has to be an odd number. If I'm feeling, sometimes I will grab one of those little artifacts and hold it in my hand, depending upon how I'm feeling or what I want to call in. And I will generally do a couple of breathing exercises. It might only breaths, and then it's getting the fidgets out and sitting and meditating as still as I can. I've gotten very good at accepting when stuff pops into my head or thinking about what I'm going to make for dinner that night. I just let it kind of roll off. I think about clouds in the sky and letting it roll off. So that's my more traditional meditation practice. My other one I call the bed med, which is basically meditating in bed. which I do a lot of mornings. So I'm an early riser. I get up usually by 5. And I have a slow wake up in the morning. And what I will do though consciously is I will either sit up in bed or I'll lay in kind of a shavasana type position and do my meditation when I'm in bed. So, I do find that when I'm doing more of a traditional meditation, I have more ideas and kind of, you know, brilliant things pop into my head. But when I'm doing the bed med, it's more about calm and creating some peace and, you know, calmness to take with me throughout the rest of the day. But I also meditate in my car, or if I'm super stressed in a situation, I will definitely close my eyes and take a couple, you know, deep breaths and try and get into that space for a few minutes. I believe that just like with spirituality, you have to make meditation your own so that it works for you. So, you know, I recommend things like people doing essential oil sprays, or I even have had clients where they can't get away from their kids. So I'm like telling them to take a 5-minute meditation break in the shower or in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you just have to make it your own, and you have to make it feel good to you too, which is why, like I talked about, kind of easing my clients into some of this stuff. Sometimes meditation feels icky and sticky for them and they feel guilty. So I work with them to do things to make it feel good. So it might be some aromatherapy kind of spray. It might be putting on their favorite lip gloss before they sit down, or putting on some lotion. And I know that that kind of sounds superficial. It sounds superficial when I say it out loud, but for me to get them doing it and doing it in a way that feels good to them is the most important thing.
Well, that's beautiful. That's really, really good stuff. Thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Thank you.
What's the best way for people to find you, get a hold of you, all that good stuff?
Absolutely. Thank you. The best way is through my website, which is sarachristensen.com, and that's sarachristensen.com. And I would love to connect.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for taking the time to be on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a fun conversation.
Yeah. Everybody, go out and have a beautiful, wonderful day.
This is life-changing for me. I need to tell the world about it. They're like tucking crystals in their bras and they're asking me about tarot cards. We're all perfectly imperfect. It's my purpose in this lifetime to take good care of myself and to live the happy, beautiful life that I want to live, and also to teach other women to do the same thing so that we can be dancing and joyful and live these kind of lives that we want to live.